So we're very happy to have Don Loney here, and we're looking forward. He's still here. He's right behind me, and he's ready to go. So let's bring him on with a big hand.
I'm delighted to be here, really. I wish Mr. Martin were here. It's been a long time since I've seen him. He's gotten heavier and growing older. You know, I don't think I would have recognized him last night if it hadn't have been for that suit. Otherwise, I would have known. And I'm very happy that I got in on your talent contest. I have talent. I don't know what kind it is, but I do have a poem or here too for you. One is, the stockings were hung by the chimney with care. I'd worn them for months and they needed the air. And here's one that always touches my heart. Mary had a little lamb. She tied him to a heater. Every time he turned, he burned his little cedar. And then looking at this young lady in about the third row from the front, I think of that little poem, "Roses are red, violets are blue, your mother was pretty, what happened to you?" I spoke at a commencement this spring, and a lady came up to me and she said, "Oh, Mr. Loney," she said, "I'm just so full of your message. I'm just filled with it." She said, "It was just so wonderful." Her little boy was standing there, and I said, "Son, how about you?" He said, "I got my belly full, too." I was in a high school, or they were showing a movie not long ago, and they turned out the lights, and just before they hit the projector, I heard, "Girl says, Herbert, I'm over here." Talking about kissing, I'll never forget the first time I kissed the girl that is now my wife, Betty. You talk about emotion. It ran a cold chill right down my back. Her popsicle was dripping. Paula said to his girlfriend, he said, "Can I kiss you?" And she was silent. And he said, "May I kiss you?" And she was silent. Finally, he said, "Are you deaf?" She said, "Are you paralyzed?" Well, there you have it. But I was going to have an assembly in a high school one day, so I parked my car in the parking lot, which is always a nice place to park it. I saw a lady park a car by the Braille system the other day. She saw the place to back into, you know, and wham, 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 wham. Finally got it in there. Saw an accident. A fella got out and said to this lady, "You blind?" She said, "I hit you, didn't I?" But I was getting ready to go into the high school, and this boy was sitting in his car, and I heard this sound. I looked over, and here sat this test pilot and his bomb, you know. Gasoline alley ready to take off. So I stood and watched. Boy, when he realized he had an audience, he went... I thought, when he lifts that clutch out, well, he did. And real estate flew all over the place. Gravel, dirt, rocks, stones, and boy, that car zigged and zagged and hit the pavement, and yeah! I yelled, "Soccer to her, kid boy, let her have it, you know." And I was a cheering away, and I turned around and looked, and the principal was looking out the window. I walked into high school and tried to look intellectual, and he said, "Mr. Loney," and I said, "Yes, sir." He said, "We're delighted to have you." I said, "Well, I'm delighted to be here." Said, "I see your little friend was putting on quite a show." Then I realized I was taken in. He said, "I thought when you were coming in, you might be interested in seeing his report card." The other day, my boy brought in his report card and said, "Dad, here's my report card and here's one of yours." I said, "Well, Gordon, I'm going to give you the same thing that my father gave me for my report card." But when I looked at that boy's report card, I'll tell you what I found out. That was the only thing that boy was good at. He was driving a car like an idiot because he had grades to match. The longer I looked at that card, the more I realized this. You take that car away from that boy, and that boy had nothing. I'm finding an increasing number of fellas today that are actually selling out horsepower for manpower. Oh, they won't go to church on Sunday night unless they get the car.
"If I don't get the car, I won't go."
And most of them, you take that car away from them, and they're nothing. Had four girls came in one day and sat down in front of me. Now, I'll admit they attracted my attention. When I looked at them first, they looked to me like they had been working all night in a coal mine. And they had washed their faces well before they came to school, but they hadn't gotten into their eye sockets. They were all black. I learned later they call that eyeshadow. From where I was sitting, they looked like four jack-o'-lanterns with a candle gone out. I wanted to say, "Girls, are we celebrating Halloween early this year, or is that your face?" Their hair, I just never knew they made shredded wheat that long. Really. Dear, oh me, you never saw anything like it. You know, I kind of felt sorry for those girls because I thought to myself, they got the same idea that the fellow with the car's got. If I can just attract attention, I got acceptance. One day going to an assembly, a principal said to me, "Mr. Loney, do you see those two boys? They live within two blocks of each other. Their parents are in the same income bracket. They go to the same church. They started school here together. They will finish together." But he said, "Those boys are as different as black and white. They're as different as night and day. They are as different as right and wrong." Then he asked me this question: what makes the big difference in teenagers? I didn't have the answer. So the next few high schools I went to, I asked teenagers to answer it for me. I said, "Put on this paper, whether you're a boy or girl, the grade you're in your age, and answer the question, what makes the big difference in teenagers?" I was amazed when I got the answers. They answered it with three little R's, and the three little R's were not reading, writing, and arithmetic. As important as that may be. In fact, I am far more concerned about the I will in the life of a teenager than I am the IQ. I'm far more concerned about a teenager having some get-up, some go, some drive, some purpose, some desire to win than I am IQ. In fact, I can tell you three little habits that if you have all three of them or a combination of them, you'll never make it. I don't care how smart you are or who your parents are. And they are these. Number one is the late habit. One thing successful people have in common is this: they're on time. And not only that, successful people get very irritated when other people are late because they value time. But this is a habit, this business of being late. School functions, church functions, civic functions, all start late. Banquets never start on time. The habit. Second little habit that'll kill you off in a hurry is this "I'm not going to sweat it" routine. I'm not killing myself. You know what I found out? The have not and the haves are as different as the did and the did not. The third little habit that'll kill you off is the I quit routine. Boy, if the ball doesn't bounce your way, you quit. But the three little R's the teenager said made the difference were these. The first one was the little word responsibility. Being responsible. Now, I don't mean the kind where a fellow applied for a job and they said, are you responsible? He said, very much so. He said, in fact, the last job I had, every time something happened, they said I was responsible. I don't mean that at all. A little girl came up to me in a high school one day, and she looked at me. She said, Mr. Loney, she said, I am almost 19. I am a senior. I have been married. I've had a child. I am divorced. I am back in high school. I am bitter. I am an old woman at 18. But she said, you know what hurts? She said, in this town, this size, everybody knows how I've lived. Everybody knows what I've done. I am Exhibit A in this high school. But in spite of it, young people continue to travel down the same road that I have already traveled. The only difference is I happen to know what's at the end of that road. I wish, she said, I could have heard a talk like this a year and a half ago. I'm not saying my life would have been any different, but it may have been. Thank you for coming to our school. She turned around and walked off, and as she walked away, I said to myself, there is a young lady that has learned responsibility the hard way. Teenager, God doesn't cancel his rules for teenagers. One of the saddest commencements I ever had was in the state of Wisconsin. After the exercise, I was invited to go to the local funeral home with a senior class to pay our respects to the family of a young lady that was to have graduated that night. The night before, she went out to celebrate. This young lady had never drank a drop of liquor in her life, but the driver had. When that car ended up in an automobile crash, it didn't make any difference to God that this young lady was an only child. Didn't make any difference to God that she was to graduate within 24 hours. Didn't make any difference to God that she was going to the university in the fall. God does not cancel his rules with teenagers. And young fella, young lady, any time you get in a car with a fella or a girl that's a smart aleck, just remember this. If that car hits an immovable object, it is the weight of your body plus the speed of the car plus the distance from the dashboard equals the force with which your body hits the windshield and dashboard of that car. And it wouldn't make any difference to God if the President of the United States or the Pope of Rome, and I don't say that disrespectfully, were sitting in the front seat of that car. The mathematical equation would be the same. The Bible says, be not deceived. You know what that means? Don't be fooled. God is not mocked. You know what that means? God won't be laughed at. You can laugh at Don Loney and get away with it. You can laugh at your mother and father and get away with it. You can laugh at the school teacher and the preacher and get away with it. But God says he will not be laughed at. The second little R the teenagers came up with that made the difference was the little word respect. There's hardly a conference that I speak at or at a high school or church, but what some adult comes up to me and says, will you say something about respect? Now, I had this business of respect brought home to me when I was a ninth grader in high school. That was a wonderful year. That was the year that I played the part of Abraham Lincoln in the school play because I was the only student with a beard. And really, when I passed from the ninth grade into the tenth grade, I almost forgot to shave. But at any rate, when I was a ninth grader, I went tearing down the hall one day, and the principal, Mr. Rabbit, reached out and grabbed me. Buddy, he shook me till every bone of my body rattled. I saw a teacher grab a boy one time and shake him, and she said, Johnny, I think that devil's got a hold of you. And he says, I think he has, too. But, boy, Mr. Rabbit shook me. He didn't hurt me physically, but you know what really hurt was as he shook me, I looked over, and here were some of my buddies and a school teacher standing along the wall with sort of the, you know. My pride was hurt. I was embarrassed. When Mr. Abbott got through shaking me and I found out what he wanted me for, I hadn't done it. First time in my life I'd ever been nailed for something I hadn't done. Boy, I looked at him and I said, would you keep your grubby hands off of me? Boy, and I went running for the boys' washroom. They wouldn't let me in, the girls. But I got in the washroom and I said, I don't know who this Mr. Abbott thinks he is pushing me around and doing all that. Rah, rah, rah. Boy, and I got those fellas right back on my side. I walked in the next class period like I had a mortgage on the school, and that teacher just gave me one bit of trouble, buddy. I'd close that school. But halfway through the class period, she tapped me on the shoulder and she said, Mr. Rabbit, I'd like to see you in the office. I said, I'd like to see him, too. My little girl, Betsy, came to the table the other day with her lower lip sticking out. I said, be careful, Betsy, you'll stumble over that lower lip. It's not funny, Daddy. I got down to the principal's office. Mr. Abbott said four little words that straightened me out. Fella said to his girlfriend, honey, say those three little words that'll send me out of this world. She said, go hang yourself. Or say something soft and sweet. She says, chocolate fudge. Mr. Abbott said, I called your home. My mother and father had that old-fashioned idea, if you were in trouble at school, you were in trouble at home. He didn't talk to me. Why talk to an idiot? Boy, he just rolled me over that chair and applied the Board of Education to the seat of knowledge. And that was it. That was the SWAT that was heard around the high school. With that, I was dismissed. That night after supper, Dad said, son, I want to see you in the basement. We were going on a whaling expedition. Dad and Mother came from the old country, but they were very patriotic because that night Father gave me the stripes and I saw the stars. And I went to bed whistling the stars and stripes forever. At 6:45. With no radio or no television in my room, or no Ritz crackers or Coca-Cola. Next morning, I got up to go to school. Dad was sitting at the breakfast table. I said, aren't you going to work today, Dad? He said, not this morning. I said, how come? He said, I am going to school with you. Oh, I thought, how precious. Daddy and Donnie going to school. Do you know that I am the youngest of six. My sisters still call me Donnie. They really do. It's rough being the youngest of six and getting all the hand-me-downs, especially when the other five were girls. To this day, I hate green garters. But we got to Mr. Abbott's office, and Mr. Abbott, or my father said to Mr. Abbott, he said, "What happened yesterday?" I thought he's kidding. I've gotten two beatings, and he wants to know what happened. This can't be the build-up to the main event. So he told him. He made Mr. Abbott get all of those boys and the teacher in the office, and I had to apologize. Boy, that's hard. You know, I find my own children the hardest thing in the world. Okay, Beth, tell me what you did.
You know what I did?
Well, I say I know that, but tell me. Oh, those beggars hate to tell you. It's hard to apologize. Dad said, "Mr. Abbott, this will never happen again." Of course, I knew it wasn't going to happen again. That night after supper, Dad said, "Son, I want you to go for a walk with me." I knew what he wanted. He wanted to talk to me alone. We didn't have one of these big houses with 2.5 baths and a den in it and all that sort of stuff. In fact, we didn't need a den in our house. My dad roared in every room in the house. But we had a house that was out of this world, so was the bathroom. It was way out, believe me. You know something I learned? I learned which side to put the flashlight on or you lost it. And about every 3 years, I can see several of you know what I'm talking about. Yes. But we got outside. We'll drop that right here. We got outside, and Dad said, "Son, I know you think I'm making a mountain out of a molehill. But," he said, "when you left off to Mr. Abbott the other day," he said, "you didn't make a fool out of Mr. Abbott. He said, you made a first-class fool out of your father and mother because we raised you and he didn't. Now, if you can't go back there to that high school and talk like a man and act like a man," he said, "you might as well go to school and quit. Because a diploma is not going to make that big a difference in your life." He said, "you know why foreigners make good in this country?" And he said, "your father's a foreigner. Every time I open my mouth, they know I wasn't born in the United States. I know what it is for men to make cracks about these European peasants to get off the boat in New York City with a $5 bill in their wallet and a train ticket in their hand and all they own in their bank. And 6 months later, they got the best jobs in the country, jipping Americans out of jobs and everything." He said, "I've heard that song sung ever since I arrived." You know something? A European peasant today can still get off the boat in New York City and jip an American out of a job. You know why? For the same two reasons Dad told me. Said the first one is they're not afraid of hard work. God doesn't put a premium on laziness. The Bible says the sluggard will not plow by reason of the cold. Therefore, he will beg bread in the harvest and have nothing. But Dad said the second reason is the little word respect. Our teachers wore academic gowns or tunics that came to their waist. You knew the degree they held by the cut of the sleeve. And he said, "and believe me, you didn't talk back to them." You know what the Bible says about respect? Romans, the 13th chapter and the 7th verse. Listen to these words. Render therefore to all their dues, tribute to whom tribute is due, custom to whom custom, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor. That verse spells respect. Adam and Eve had the problem of respect, or rather their children, Cain and Abel. One brought the sacrifice that God required, and the other one said, I'll recognize God, but I'll recognize him in my own way. The Bible says that God did not respect the offering of Cain. Many teenagers today are not respecting God. They say, I'm going to do it my own way. I was asked one time what I thought was the great problem with young people. One simple little word in the book of Romans. There is no fear of God before their eyes. Respect. Believe me, teenager, when I say this, that respect will take you down the right road a long, long way. It's as natural as rain from heaven for a person to favor the person that has the right attitude, whether it's in the classroom or the shop. One of the little words that makes the big difference is respect. The final little R that teenagers said made the difference was the little word religion. Now, I know this is where most people back off. And I know that some of you are saying right now, okay, boy, here comes the commercial. Well, I want to go on record right now that I never apologized for the Bible. I never apologized for Sunday school, the church, and my personal faith in Jesus Christ. Now, I know everyone has his own philosophy of life. Solomon said that. He said, there is a way which seemeth right unto man, but the end thereof are the ways of death. One of the books that Solomon wrote was the little book of Ecclesiastes. It's reasoning about life from man's point of view. I call it the merry-go-round book. Because the whole sum and substance is a very pessimistic picture. That man is born, man lives, man dies, and it's all vanity. And that's about the way it is with the merry-go-round. You get on, you go around, child isn't satisfied with sitting on that horse and holding on to the brass pole, so what do you find him doing? Standing in the saddle, crawling around and sitting on the legs. But they get off where they got on, and they complain the ride was too short. That's about the way Solomon looked at life. He tried thrills. He said, I gave myself to enjoy pleasure. What are teenagers doing today? They're trying every thrill there is in the books, only to find out it doesn't really satisfy. In fact, it says in Ecclesiastes that the eye is not satisfied with seeing. We got colored TV, but it still isn't satisfying. Nor, it says, the ear filled with hearing. You ever go in a restaurant and watch kids put nickels in the Nickelodeon and then watch the reactions? Knocking their heads together like they got the rickets, you know? You can't understand it. It's going so loud and so forth, and they're wiggling and wobbling around and everything else. And And yet they're not satisfied. And these disc jockeys say, here is a tune that is different. Solomon tried it all. Then he tried things. He said, I made me great works. Boy, we're living in a materialistic age. Listen, teenage fella, you got that automobile 6 months ago. The thrill's worn off. It hasn't worked. Young lady, you got a wardrobe. You got this and you got that, but it hasn't brought the desired result. Oh, you might be the one that can set everybody up in a mold, but that soon brings criticism and contempt. We're surrounded with more wealth and more material things and gadgets today than ever, but we're more dissatisfied. He tried theories. He said, I gave myself to wisdom. We're worshiping today at the altar of education. Summer school is more popular than Sunday school. IQ, I gotta get this, I gotta, like, education is the answer. Education without God isn't the answer. You have to educate a man to write his name so that he can forge a check or manipulate figures. He has to know mathematics. But we are worshiping today at the altar of education and academics. Solomon said, I tried it all, and it's vanity. When he closed the book, the interesting thing to me is this. He didn't address his remarks to those that were on Social Security and those that about had it. But he addressed his remarks to young people, and he said this, remember now thy Creator in the days of thy youth, while the evil days come not. In other words, if you think you've got problems and temptations now, they've just begun. Nor the years draw nigh when thou shalt say, I have no pleasure in them. But he said, remember now thy Creator. Then he said the whole conclusion, and you got to have a foundation to life. He said the conclusion of the whole matter is this. Fear God and keep his commandments. For this is the whole duty of man. One day, a Sunday school teacher introduced me to a person that changed my life. In fact, one of the words that he said that day were these. From this day forth, your life will never be the same. And how true that is. This person made the difference between driving and drifting. This person made the difference between purpose and laxity. And the person is Jesus Christ. The verse he used was John 3:16. So simple, so well known. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish but have everlasting life. And then he quoted it this way for me. For God so loved Don Loney that he gave his only begotten Son, that Don Loney believeth in Jesus Christ, Don Loney should not perish, but have everlasting life. That day I learned the riddle to life and the mystery of death were solved in one person. Because the Bible says, he that hath the Son hath life, real life, with a capital L. And he that hath not the Son of God hath not life. That day, I found not what made the difference in my life, but who made the difference. What makes the difference? Three little R's. Respect, responsibility, and religion.